Welcome to the Leadership Forum, where we discuss leaders and followers.
What makes a leader? What makes a person to be a credible leader? A leader that people look up to, a leader that people can identify.
This episode is a repeat of the live session that happens on Mondays on Hope FM Mid-Morning Show with Wamboi Mburu, featuring the Bishop of Christ is the Answer Ministries, Dr. David Oginde.
Listen and live.
Bishop, last time we were talking about that triangle that we called toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Very toxic. In fact, it's more toxic because, as you told us, each of the sides of the triangle feed on the other.
Right.
That makes it tragically toxic.
Exactly.
If each was standing on its own,
exactly,
it would reduce the toxics.
That is true.
All right.
That is true.
So last time, I think we were on the susceptible followers. We kept going on that up to where we were talking about locus of control.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Yeah, this was a study done by three researchers at Padilla, Morgan, and Kaiser. And they found that actually, as just as you have observed, these three sides of the triangle actually work together to form this unholy trinity called the toxic triangle, and leads to an environment in which destructive leaders really thrive.
Yes.
Destructive leadership.
Yes.
So their research is quite informative, and that's what we have been looking at in the last few weeks. Some of the things that they found out about these three sides to this triangle. The destructive leader, the susceptible followers, and the conducive environment.
Mm.
And so the followers, really we were into two groups. The conformers and the colluders. These two groups actually form this kind of followers who help these kind of leaders to thrive and to continue in their destructive behavior. And we spent a bit of time with these conformists last time, as part of what we were talking about, locus of control and so on. And then we were moving to these colluders. And we said colluders are people who are really pursuing their own interest. And they find their interest can be met and be fulfilled within the leaders that they are following. So if they remain loyal to these leaders, then they will be able to achieve their ambitions. So the ambition is part of what leads them to really work with these people. And we say that colluders are people who could actually be conscious that what is going on is not right. But they do not want to rock the boat because they know that if this leader were to change tact or to be removed and another one put in, then their hopes are gone. So they just want to prop this person as a pillar or as a track that they will ride on, but for their own selfish reason. They are quite different from the conformers, who have also self-interest, but more of needs, personal needs. And so any person who can come and meet their needs, they will be quite happy to rally behind them. Very different from these ambitious guys.
Mm.
And so that is, I think that's where we left it.
Yes, it is.
And we look at some other aspects of this triangle, especially with still on these people who are colluders. What are some other characteristics of these people? The other one is really shared beliefs. Sometimes you find that the people that are following the destructive leaders is because they also see the world in the same way. If they were to be in the place of the leader, they will do exactly, if not worse, things. So they do not see the wrong things that people may be seeing. Or even if they see it, they see it as the only way to deal with issues. You find this especially in the political arena, where you find people really urging bad leaders to continuing to do the bad that they are doing, because they also see the world in the same way, and so they don't see which other way it could be done, and that makes it very, very, very terrible, because those people then cannot advise the leader otherwise to change direction, to change tact, to be more transformative and helping the people. But they see that this is the way to go. Yeah, I think of a person like Paul, you know, the apostle, before he was Paul, when he was Saul, because the Pharisees saw themselves as the only people with the truth. Any other person who did not have that truth and who did not follow that route was really out of line. And so they sought to eliminate people who did not walk in that way. And so when Paul goes out, or rather Saul goes out to kill the members of the church, he has all the support of the Pharisaic team. So they could not stop him. In fact, they urged him on. And it is it's a very unfortunate thing, because the issue here is the worldview, the belief, the understanding of how things should happen. When we think of even the terrorists of our time, it is the same kind of thing. There are people who are very happy when they kill people, you know, when they do certain things. So while the rest of the people would be saying this is terrible, for them they are seeing this is the only way to deal with these other people who don't believe like we do. Mm. And so it perpetuates that kind of structure, because of the way people believe, the way people see the world is in a destructive direction. And so that helps destructive leaders to thrive, because their followers see them as heroes more than as villains, you know.
Mm.
And it really messes up everything. The third one that these three authors tell us is what they call the unsocialized values. When people believe or have values that are only specific to them, and then they try to generalize the same, then it becomes a problem. And again, it could relate to just the one that we have talked about. Whereas we have talked about worldview, but worldview also affects values. And that is where the third part of this group comes in. Are people who have values that are only within them. It is not broad-based.
You're losing me. Unsocialized values.
And so, I would put it this way.
Yes.
Suppose you have grown up in a village.
I did, yes.
You did.
That I don't have to suppose is the truth. Yes.
Now, you've grown up in the village into your adulthood.
Yes.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
So, within your context, there are ways in which you do things.
All right.
Which are generally acceptable within that environment.
Yes.
Village environment.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, you are picked from there and brought within, say, the urban context.
Yeah.
Now, you have always believed that this is how things ought to be. When you come in a different context and find people doing things differently, you have this belief or thinking that what they are doing is wrong.
Okay.
Because it is contrary to what you know. Because you have not been socialized in any other context other than your own context. Your values have not been tested in applied in a different context other than your own context. So when you now begin to apply these values in that context, you find that people are resisting or people are not with you. And so if you had the power, you would force those values upon them.
Oh, that's how leadership issues now come in.
Come in, yes.
All right.
Because if you had the power, then you would want everybody
to do it this way.
To do it the way you know it is done.
And it has worked.
Yes.
In the past.
In the past.
Yeah.
But you see, it is there may be values that are operating within your context that you have grown up in, but they're not universal. That's why we call them unsocialized. You have not interacted with other people to see how those values apply, you know?
Okay.
So it's almost being narrow-minded. You see things from a very narrow perspective, while the wider community may be seeing things and applying values that are quite different from yours. So that's why it is unsocialized, because you have not interacted with others.
Okay.
Other people with the different kinds of values.
All right. Okay.
And yet you believe that this is it, that our way is the best.
If the alternative phrase would be narrow-minded, then let's settle for unsocialized. Let's settle for this.
It is still the same.
I was wondering whether we can have a simpler way of saying it, but I think you're right. Let's call it unsocialized values.
Lack of exposure. Yeah, I don't know what can how better to say it, because
no, it's best said unsocialized values.
Yes.
That's complicated, but it's less. It's better.
It's narrow-minded.
It sounds better to say that. All right.
Yeah, because you will find people, and this can apply even within organizations. Say, for example, you have worked within an organization for most of your life, 30 years, 40 years. You move to another organization as a leader. You will want to import
what you know. And what worked.
And what you have practiced. And now you want to force everybody within the organization to do things in the same way.
That is unsocialized.
It is very unsocialized.
Yes, I get it.
Get it.
I do.
Yeah, so that's what it is all about. So you bring your own context, your own beliefs that are really localized. And now you want to bring it to the broader body.
Mm.
And yet the broader body, what you believe in is actually not universal, because there are values that are universal. You can move from one context to another and they apply.
Some.
Yes. Uh-huh. There's those values that are universal everywhere, like integrity, you know.
Mm.
You go from one place to another. You will never find a place where they say, here we don't believe in integrity. They may not practice it, but they believe in it.
Mm.
Because they are universal values. But there are those localized values that only apply to a particular organization or only apply to a particular group of people, but cannot...
Why are we calling them values? You know, there's something broad about the word value in my understanding that's really positive.
Yes, it is positive. We are not talking about bad things. I'm trying to think of a good... example.
Yeah, an example who is helps.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of an example.
Mm.
Whatever we are talking about is not a bad thing. It's not comparable to what we were talking about earlier in the example I gave of Saul, for example. But we are talking about things that you believe that are true and that practical within your own context. They could even be cultural. You know, cultural practices and values, they are not bad, you know.
Mm.
But you can't import them and begin to impose them upon another group, because they don't believe and practice the same way. And I think tribal cultures and values would be a good example, you know. There are practices within a particular tribe that helps that community to live in harmony and understand one another and do things in a good way. And it works for them. It has worked through generations, through years. Now, you can't import that and bring to another tribe or another cultural context, because for them, they do things in a different way.
Mm.
But you'll find people who insist, you know, that it has to be done this way, you know? And then, therefore, you become a tyrant in that way. Let's say in a cross-cultural marriage, you come from two different cultures, and say the man who is the leader of the home says it has to be
this way.
Our way. This is how my people do it, and therefore we have to do it. It may not be a bad thing. It may be a good thing. It works. It helps social harmony. But I come from a different context, and that's just not how we do things. So then, when you begin to force people to act in your way, you become destructive.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is not transformative.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So the values we are talking about here may not necessarily be bad values. Okay. Some of them may be bad. But we are talking about things that people believe in and helps them to live together in harmony.
All right.
But it is localized in that context. So you can't just transport them and say, this is now how everybody
will
is going
behave.
To live. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I think, for example, when President Chiluba took over leadership in Zambia back in the days.
Mm. I know.
You remember?
I do. I do.
Yes.
The covenant?
Chiluba was a born-again Christian, you know, and upon taking over leadership, he declared Zambia a Christian nation. Now, I am a Christian, but I thought that was not wise.
Even right then?
Yes, it was not. Even today, if somebody, what, a Christian, born-again Christian, were to take over leadership in Kenya and declare Kenya a Christian nation, I would find it difficult. Why? Because there are people who are not Christians and do not subscribe to Christianity. So we can't impose our Christian values and principles and conduct upon them. That is not even the Jesus way. The Jesus way is by persuasion, by telling people, and whosoever wills comes. So our Christian values are not just the best. They are the only values that I know of.
Mm.
But we can't impose them on people. So that's what that's kind of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
as a leader.
So you thought, going to that specific example.
Yes.
So you thought even then that there was destruction ahead? Did you feel like that?
I thought it was going to, and it did.
It did.
I actually said that is not a wise move. Those many years ago, I did say that was not a wise move. Many Christians celebrated.
Oh, yeah. The prayer was amazing, Bishop. It was an amazing covenant, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
It was. But you see, as a leader at that level,
yes,
you cannot impose values and beliefs upon people. It always backfires because the human nature is rebellious.
Yes.
That's what we got from Adam's fall. So that whenever something is imposed upon people, their natural reaction is to rebel. So it actually works against the church. If you begin to impose,
yes,
it works.
I went to a
school where the Christian Union was compulsory, and we rebelled.
Mm.
Yeah, we didn't want to get saved. We didn't want to go to church, but we were forced to go to Christian Union.
You didn't like it.
We didn't like it.
People want the door open.
Open, yes.
You can't force the
you
door
can't force
on me.
It.
All right.
So we would find every reason why we should not go to the Christian Union.
Yeah.
You know? And it just works. You know? It just happens that way. People are naturally rebellious.
Mm.
So when you impose things upon them, even good ones, they rebel against it. And that was my fear, that this is what might happen in Zambia. And it did happen. By the time Chiluba left, the Christians were not in a good stand, you know.
It's a sad...
It is a sad story.
It's one of the saddest stories I know. It's sad. It's a sad story.
It is sad. But you see, if he were to do it in a different way,
yeah,
where he led through what we call servant leadership, transformational leadership, you would find that it works. Because people, it is not imposed on them, but they begin to see the good things that the leader is doing. And when they realize that what this person is doing is as a result of their belief and their faith, they want that God.
Yes.
You see?
True.
As opposed to when you impose it on others.
Yes.
So it's a good values,
but
the person was not properly socialized to know. You remember there's a time we talked about emotional intelligence and so on.
Yes.
To know that this is how I deal with people. This is how I socialize with people. This is how I relate with people and how to influence them towards the right direction.
Mm.
Yes. I don't know whether it does. It makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I can see some questions on that. Like, let's deal with this one. I believe it will take just a short time. I'm wondering, can mode of dressing in church serve as an example of unsocialized value? Mode of dressing. Maybe the issue here is, where do we draw the line between...
The issue of unsocialized is this.
Yes.
When you... I think there's a saying which says, a person who has not traveled thinks his mother
is the best cook.
This is now unsocialized. In the sense that you know no different. And you think the one you know is the best. And therefore you want everybody to follow. So the dressing may not quite fit here. Unless, I don't know how it might fit in this situation. It is really sometimes out of ignorance. That's why it's called unsocialized. You don't know any better. The little that you know, you think this is it and you want everybody to follow. Should your eyes be better opened, interact with more people, you'll find that actually some of the things you hold so dear are not even important. You know,
I think still, it's a case of where do we draw the line between that and what we're talking about as unsocialized values, and something that I'm trying to recall that phrase you use so many times, the organizational culture, so that there is the as a leader, you're perhaps trying to create a certain culture. A certain good culture.
Right.
This good culture may demand certain ways of doing things. Maybe our listener then can be answered as to the line between certain things that we agree will be our culture and those that are seen as unsocialized values. So we can
those are
say
two different things.
When there's Holy Communion, we wear suits.
Yeah, black ones.
Is that a socialized value?
No.
Or is it
the word unsocialized is the key here. I agree those could be values. The unsocialized has to do with the fact that you have a narrow perspective to things or to issues.
As an individual leader.
As an individual leader or even as a group.
Or as a group?
Even as a group.
Okay.
Like I said, if you have grown up in Aboke, which is my village.
Oh, your village is called that.
Yes. All my people from that place, we see things in a particular way. And so when we are together, we are quite okay, you know, with some of the things that we believe and the way we do things. Now, pick us up as a group and take us into a different context. And we will all be saying, oh my goodness, how can they do that? You know?
Mm.
How can they even say that? Because our perspective to life, our worldview, is informed by the society within which we live. A person who has traveled a lot, their values and their worldviews has been socialized by many communities, many cultures, and so on. So it is broader, you know. So even though I may still believe on what I do and what we do in our context, and I believe it is important and it's good, it may even be superior. But I do know that there are people who do other things differently. And therefore, when I'm interacting with people or I'm leading a group of people, I am careful not to impose just my views, but to respect that there are people who may believe differently. I don't know whether it begins to make sense. So that I have a better appreciation of diversity. That I know that, yes, where I come from, this is how we do things, and I think our culture may even be the best in the way we do things. But then there are other people who also do things differently. So I as long as it is not a universal value being violated, I then allow them space or at least understand them. That is a person who has been socialized.
Because we are Christians, back to issues about leadership,
mm-hmm.
and being a believer, being a Christian, I think Christianity has a few or a number of, shall we call them absolutes?
Mm-hmm. Dogmatic.
Yes.
Even.
Yes.
Like Jesus is the only way.
Yes.
Yes. That is true.
What do we do with that? Because sometimes I'm thinking we are Christians, and I take modesty in dressing. I'm just going to
go back to dressing.
Dressing.
Now, you see,
yes.
A person who is unsocialized will simply say, where we come from, you wear dresses up to the ankles.
Ankle, yes.
All right? So anybody...
That's what we call modest.
That's what we call modest.
Uh-huh.
So anybody with a dress above the ankle...
Is a sinner.
Is a sinner. Cannot even go to heaven.
Yes.
Do you get it?
Mm-hmm.
So because they don't know any other within where we live and the fellowship we attend and everything we do, that has been the accepted mode. Then you travel around and you find some very decent Christians with their dresses just below the knee. And they love the Lord just as much. Now, for you, you cannot stand them. In fact, you cannot accept that they even went to the right cross. Most likely they went to the left or right. But they have missed the middle cross. So you judge them accordingly.
Yeah.
You judge them accordingly. Mm. And if you are a pastor, for example, which is now a leader,
mm-hmm.
then now you require that everybody who is in this church has to dress that way. All dresses must be to the ankle if you're really born again.
That now is...
That is unsocialized.
It is unsocialized.
And it is not because let me put it in the positive. It is because you don't know any better. I'll give you an example. While we were just after graduation from the university, we were working with students. And then Pastor Callisto and I, we worked in the same organization. Then we were sent for a conference in the U.S. as representatives of Focus, Callisto and I. So we went to this big conference in Chicago. It was dead winter. It was cold can be. I've never been in such cold before. Minus 47 degrees Fahrenheit.
That is cold.
That is cold.
Yeah.
So in this conference, everybody is in jeans and, of course, warm jackets and heavy jackets and so on. It was so cold. Now, at that time, for a woman to wear a trouser,
let alone jeans.
Let alone jeans. We knew this one has not seen the Lord.
The risen Lord.
The risen Lord. Mm. They have not.
Mm.
And it was a big thing in the Christian unions at that time. So while we had the conference and experiencing the cold we had, Callisto comes to me and says, "My brother, it would be ungodly to expect these ladies to wear a dress."
Yes.
Yes, he said that. And we agreed that actually it would be ungodly to expect them to wear dresses in this cold. You don't want even your finger, because we even wear gloves. You wear headgear, mm-hmm. You know. You don't want any portion of your body to be exposed. So to wear a dress, it would be ungodly. Now you see, suddenly our worldview, our perspective, our interpretation of Christianity had been expanded. We were socialized in a different context to realize that going to heaven is not just about genes. You know, it is something more than that. And so when we came back, it was different. You see, it was different. We were a little more understanding to our dear sisters who found it necessary. Not that we had accepted, but...
at least you could let it pass.
We could let it pass.
Yes.
You see, so where we were before, it was unsocialized. There were values, which good values, but unsocialized, unexposed. So when we were now in a context where we are exposed to something different, we begin to reevaluate our value system. And we came to the conclusion that maybe our values were premised in wrong wrong premises.
Yes.
So that's what I'm talking about. So when it comes to dressing, for example, there is what we call universal decency, that anybody can see and say, you have gone beyond boundary. And that we cannot tolerate. So depending on what dressing we are talking about, for example, in church, there are just people who dress so tightly that even they are aware that they are not decent. But they make the choice to do so. There are people who dress in such short dresses, and they are aware that they are dressing in short dresses. It is not that they are not conscious.
They know.
So that is not what we are talking about. A person who has just gone out of the way to violate universal values. This is a universal value of decency. That's not what we are talking about. That's a direct disobedience. That is direct neglect. But there are people who simply do not know any better, like we didn't know any better.
Mm.
We just knew that for you to be a woman, you have to wear a dress. That's it. The full stop, as I would say.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Would you agree with Shiko, who comments and says on the dressing, a socialized person will allow trousers to church, I guess for ladies, but wearing hot pants and tight trousers is crossing the line.
That's true.
You agree?
Yes.
What do you think of this next one? In village church, there is no way you can say you are saved if you have dreadlocks.
Yeah.
What's that?
That is in that particular context. And you see, this is where I know we are now getting into a different subject altogether.
Mm.
Not where we were initially. But just to pursue that a little more. This is where Paul says, I became all things to all men. So that whereas we may understand that it is not your hairstyle that will get you to heaven. It is not your hairstyle that determines whether you are saved or not. But there are just certain things that are not acceptable in certain contexts. And both Jesus and Paul says, if your hand leads you to sin, you just chop it off. Yeah. All it's right. Better to go to heaven with one hand
than with both hands find yourself in hell.
In hell.
Yeah.
So if you insist that I have to wear my dreadlocks, this is just my style, this is just me, you have to accept me the way I am, then now you also have crossed the boundaries, you know? Yes, dreadlocks may not determine whether you go to heaven or not. There are other things. But you go to a context where you know this is going to stumble the brethren. You better shave your hair for the sake of the brethren than to insist on your way and end up in hell. How will you end up in hell? Jesus says, whoever causes the least one of these to stumble, it is better if a millstone was put around their necks and thrown into the sea.
This is serious.
So if you are stumbling the least one of these, and the least one of these could be me as a pastor. So you insist you have to wear these dreadlocks, you insist you have to do this, and you know for sure this is going to stumble, brethren, you are not behaving Christianly.
All right.
Yes. You may be right, but you could be dead right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's handle one more question. Then we come and continue with the where we were before we deviated. Bishop says this one, today is tough. So can we just let the gay people have their way so as to look socially modern? That's another question.
That's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good question. And here is my position.
All right.
As a socialized person, we know that homosexuality is a sin, and that we cannot compromise. It will not change with the time.
Those are the absolutes.
Those are absolutes. Those are universal values.
Yeah.
From a biblical perspective, even from a natural perspective, it is not just Christians who believe homosexuality is wrong or evil.
Mm.
So it's a universal human value, and it is not going to change with the time. You see?
Yes.
Now, that is on the one hand. On the other hand, we appreciate that there are people who find themselves in this way. Now, we will not stone them to death, but we will seek to win them and bring them to the place where they appreciate that they are walking in the wrong direction and point them to the right direction. So we extend love and understanding to such people so that we may bring them to the right path. That is a socialized person. But if you just come out and say, let's kill them, then now you are unsocialized.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we are not saying that we will accept gayism and we'll accept homosexuals and with the time we'll just allow. No, that we can't. And we have to resist it.
All
because
right.
It is evil, it is wrong, it is sin when we bring it to spiritual level. But the homosexual himself or herself, that's a person we want to work with and help to get in the right path.
All right.
Join us next week for the second episode of the Leadership Forum.
Listen and live.